Happy Sabbath, brethren. It's a welcome, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity of our fellowship. This is Brother Jackson in the Congregation of Elohim in New York. I thank Elohim that we were able to make our trip, and come back short trip. But I'm glad we were able to be back here on time. Today we will be in Acts chapter 21, verses 25 and on. But we saw last Sabbath from verse 14 to 25 certain things, important practices, attitudes that we should have, that we need to be ready about what we need to do for Elohim. We need to be welcoming to each other who are truly brethren. We need to keep ourselves situated be in the company of the right people that are, in other words, be in the company of the people of Elohim, especially when we are doing his work. And we need to share when we come together, as we are today, as we have opportunity to share. We should share. We should share our most recent experiences, what we've done for Elohim, any challenges that we should share with each other so we could be encouraged, or so we can know how to pray for each other, to edify each other. We need to share so we can grow and make right decisions about things in a uniform way. We saw how when Paul came to Jerusalem and he shared everything with the brethren, how they listened intently. And then once they were done listening to Paul, to all the wonderful things Elohim was accomplishing through him, how they shared with Paul some concerns, a concern about his reputation that was tarnished, where false teachers, where liars were basically saying he was teaching the Yehudim, the Jews, who are in the midst of the Gentiles, to forsake circumcision and obedience to the law, which thing, as they said, are nothing, doesn't even exist. They understood Paul. And so they told Paul what he needed to do, and which Paul was ready to do and did. And this is where we will be continuing in verse 25 and on. Hold on 1 second, brethren. Switching the Bible here, I have the old King James. I want to read from the more recent, so I just switched Bibles. Bear with me here. Okay. Thank you for holding, brethren. Yeah, so continuing with verse 25 of chapter 21, it says, but concerning the Gentiles who believe, we have written and decided that they should observe no such thing, except that they should keep themselves from things offered to idols, from blood, from things strangled, and from sexual immorality. All of these things we can find detailed in the law. And in okay, so quickly, things offered to idols. Idols are graven images or standing images of anything that one might want to worship or pay homage to. We do not do that to any image. And interestingly, on the way home from this Sabbath visit that I did today with my daughter, on the way back, we were talking about idols. Idols are not just those things that are of false Elohim. It's also, we're not to make idols of the truth. In Romans chapter 1, Romans chapter 1, it speaks about making idols. In Romans chapter 1, verses 21 to 24, it says, because although they knew Elohim, they did not glorify him as Elohim. They knew Elohim, not a false one. This is not some other. They knew the Elohim, but they did not glorify him as Elohim, nor were thankful, but became futile, but became. So this is a process, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. This process of idolatry. They knew the true Elohim, by the things that he made, as seen in verse 20. We can't spend too much time on this, but although they knew Elohim, they did not honor him. They did not esteem him as Elohim. Nor were they appreciated for all his benefits. The book, The Record of Clement, of the teachings of Peter, really describes this a lot, very, very well, how from generation to generation, mankind became very futile. And they were not thankful. They became, it became as if, you know, they deserved everything. Okay? Like we see today, entitled. People felt like as if, oh, it's natural for me to just have the foods around me, the trees and have everything. It's natural. I'm not thankful. They don't need to be thankful or appreciative of it. They were not thankful. And as they became futile in their thoughts, they no longer had Elohim, his ways governing their way of thinking, their paradigm. They became futile, useless in their thoughts about worthless things that accomplish nothing, just vanity and just utter convenience, as we see today. The technology today is all about convenience. It doesn't really make life, the quality of life, better. It just makes things more convenient while taking away health and polluting our land. That the technology is out of balance. So much has to be destroyed and polluted to create some of the technology we use, which we're using right now. And this is the situation we're in. We look forward to the time where we don't need to do these things anymore, but they became futile in their thoughts and their foolish hearts were darkened. So it's a process. It's a progress. It's a progressive change in the negative into darkness. And they professing to be wise, they became fools. And changed the glory of the incorruptible Elohim into an image like corruptible man and birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. So you see what glory was changed. It's not just a matter of making statues of Baal or or some other non-deity, but it's wrong to make images of the true. See, they change the glory of the incorruptible Elohim into an image made like corruptible man. They make images of him in man-like structures, or that of birds, or that of four-footed beasts and creeping things. So today we have religions that are old, and they even claim to be Christian. They boast of being the best because they've been around longer than any other quote unquote Christian group or Bible believing group. That premise is false. Okay. Just because a group has been around longer than all others doesn't necessarily make it the true, because congregations have become corrupt over the years. Again, the book of Revelations, chapter 2 to chapter 2, is replete with that, to the seven churches, how they had issues, how they had problems. So any organization that has idols in it and says, well, you know what, we're not worshiping Baal, these are images of Christ, these are images of the Father, these are images of the saints, there's nothing wrong with that, that's false. It's false. We're not to have images even of the true, because that's vanity. It's uselessness. This is exactly what Elohim doesn't want us to do, and it's covenant breaking. So today there are many people that are involved in these ancient quote unquote Christian groups that bow down to idols and think it's nothing because, hey, you know, these are idols of the saints. These are idols, images of Christ, images of the Father. All that is wrong. We're not to change the glory of the incorruptible Elohim into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed beasts. So we are to avoid idols. Going back to the book of Acts. Right? Keep themselves from idols and from blood. Okay, we think of blood as just, okay, I'm not going to eat meat rare. Yeah, it's good not to eat meat rare. But we have to also understand how important this commandment is. When you read about it in the Torah, in the book of Jubilees and elsewhere in the scriptures, it's a very important commandment that we should not consume blood. Okay? Well, I don't eat raw food. Well, much of the meat, and I've said this before, that are commonly sold in the market is full of blood. The blood was not properly drained. These things should, as the congregation of Elohim, the Bible, we should not consume those things because the blood has not been properly drained. It's a grave sin to eat anything with the blood in it. You know, when we buy these things, like go to these fast food places and those who are not vegetarians and eat such things, we're eating meat cooked with the blood in it. That's a grave sin. It ought not to be done. So we really need to be careful about those things. Keep themselves from things offered to idols, from blood, from things strangled. We don't know. I don't know how some of these, I'm a vegetarian. I thank Elohim for that, but I'm just saying we have to be very careful. We don't know the meats out there, how they were prepared. Okay. So let's be very careful. If you must eat meat, try to, get kosher meat if possible. Make sure it's really kosher, or at least halal meat. If possible, something that was prepared in the right way, where the blood is totally drained. And from sexual immorality, such things must never be among Bible believing people, those who are of the body of Messiah. These are the bare bone basics here that a body of Messiah must have. Any group that claims to be the body of Messiah, claims to be a Christian, Nazi, whatever, and have members that are involved in sexual immorality, that are somehow eating blood. That's not the congregation of Elohim. They mean well, at least maybe, but still not. The Messiah, the Spirit of Elohim, will have no part in that. That's why these bare bone minimum things are listed here. These are the bare bone things about physical comportment, how we are to carry ourselves, how we are to be. Sexual immorality, that is rampant today in the world as norm. In many quote unquote churches have become norm, but it must not be. We must be pure. We must repent of these things. If forbid these things, any of these things should be, it must not be. So then, continuing verse 26 to verse 36, it says, then Paul took the men, and the next day, having been purified with them, entered the temple to announce the expiration, the end of the days of purification, at which time an offering should be made for each one of them. And when the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, men of Israel, help! This is the man who teaches all men everywhere against the people, the law, and this place. And furthermore, he also brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled this holy place. And for they had previously seen Trophimus, the Ephesian, with him in the city, whom they supposed that Paul had brought into the temple. And all the city was disturbed, and the people ran together, seized Paul, and dragged him out of the temple, and immediately the doors were shut. And as they were seeking to kill him, news came to the commander of the garrison that all Jerusalem was in an uproar. He immediately took soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. And when they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. Then the commander came near and took him and commanded him to be bound with two chains. And he asked who he was and what he had done. And some among the multitude cried one thing and some another. And when he could not ascertain the truth because of the tumult, he commanded him to be taken into the barracks. Verse 35, and when he reached the stairs, he had to be carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the mob. For the multitude of the people followed after, crying out, away with him. Let's stop here for a second and go back to verse 26. So we see what Paul did. Paul took the men that were with him, having been purified with them. Then he entered, and so on. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but what was Paul doing? Remember what they told Paul to do. In verse 23, he said, therefore, do what we tell you. We have four men who have taken a vow. Take them and be purified with them, and pay their expenses so that they may shave their heads, and that all may know that those things of which they were informed concerning you are nothing, but that you yourselves also walk orderly and keep the Torah, keep the instruction of Elohim. So what was this vow that Paul was doing? Because it says that having purified, verse 26, having been purified as the elders told him, the Jerusalem elders told him, he entered the temple to announce the expiration of the days of purification. So he came and he was going to announce it. You see how the law works. You see how obedient Paul really was to the law. And this gives us insight into Numbers chapter 6. Numbers chapter 6. Let me just turn there quickly just to look at this vow that the apostle was doing, what kind of vow this was. It was a Nazarite vow. It says in chapter 6 of the book of Numbers, then the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when either a man or a woman consecrates an offering to make the vow of a Nazarite to separate himself to the eternal. So this vow is really a deep, and we could see here at least it's a deep extra consecration. It's a vow being made. I'm going to consecrate myself specifically more than usual in a more profound manner and in a manner more required by the, in the Torah to Elohim. So that's what the is to separate yourself to the eternal. And then I won't read the entire thing, but you can see, read it all so you could get a better understanding of the Nazarite vow. So they could not eat anything from grapes, the juice, or anything from the vine. They cannot be made unclean in any way. They could not shave their heads. Okay? And they had to, whatever amount of days it was. Here, Paul and the men with him, the four men with him, were doing it for 7 days. They made a vow to consecrate themselves more than usual for 7 days. And so they let their hair grow long throughout that length of time. They would not have any grapes whatsoever, the juice, anything from the vine. They wouldn't even touch it. And they would make sure there nothing defiles them, makes them unclean in any way. So that's what they were doing. And when the time was over, they would then shave their heads and bring it to the priest. They would bring an offering to the eternal, right? So, and now forbid, as verse 9 says, if anything happens, even if by accident, it doesn't matter. If, let's say, by accident, the person gets unclean, as shown here, as stated in verse 9, even if somebody suddenly falls dead, you're unclean. Guess what? You need to restart the vow process all over again. You must fulfill this vow. No matter how many times you fail, you cannot stop trying to fulfill this vow until it's done, until you manage to stay consecrated to Elohim without ever letting a razor shaving your head, without ever being consuming or the fruit of the vine, grapes whatsoever, without being unclean, anything that would violate that vow, you must fulfill it. You must fulfill it. And do everything that it requires here. So what would have happened next? So Paul would have brought all of these things, the offering, the hair to the priest would have handled all of these things. And then what? And the priest would offer a wave. In verse 20, I mean 19 says of Numbers 6, it says, and the priest shall take the boiled shoulder of the ram, one unleavened cake from the basket, one unleavened wafer, and put them upon the hands of the Nazarite after he has shaved his consecrated hair. And the priest shall wave them as a wave offering before the Eternal. They are holy for the priest, together with the breast of the wave offering and the thigh and the heave offering. After that, the Nazarite may drink wine. So after they've accomplished everything, then the Nazarite vow has been fulfilled. And this is what is spoken here in Acts chapter 21, that Paul and these four men were about to do. So they were about to accomplish the entire Torah concerning this vow. But it's a very strict ordinance, and it must be fulfilled. Any vow, even till today, if we vow, we must fulfill our vow. So what should we do? Rather, we should not vow. In, as Messiah admonishes us in Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 to 37, says, again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Eternal. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, For it is Elohim's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no, for whatever is more than these is from the evil one. So this is not a contradiction to the law found in the book of Numbers. Far from it. Because the law did not require you to make a vow. It only required that if you do make a vow, you must fulfill it. You have the option not to put yourself in that spot. You have that option. So as believers, New Covenant, it is wise for us to follow the teachings of Messiah, not to make such oaths. It's not necessary, not wise. As you remember Jephthah, who in his, I don't know, joy or self, or alienate, his joy, he made a vow that, you know, I will put to, you know, offer up whatever comes before me. And sadly, and you know what happened? It's a tragic, tragic, tragic story that I still don't understand today. You know, his beautiful daughter came running out. And you know the sad story after that. So we are not to make oaths. But here, we see Paul, we see people making a vow. Did he sin? No, he did not sin. But it is a vow that he needed to fulfill. Do you think according to the law, just because Paul was interrupted, that law would, that oath should not? No, according to the law, it doesn't matter what. That law, Paul has an obligation to fulfill that law. You understand? You must fulfill your oaths. Let's continue. So we see what happens next. So he came, to the expiration of the days of purification, at which time an offering should be offered, should be made for him, as listed in Numbers chapter 6. And when the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd, and they laid hands on him. They interrupted what he was doing, and they made the assumption that he was the man that's going everywhere telling the people, meaning the Jews, let me read this. Verse 28, crying out, men of Israel, help. This is the man who teaches all men everywhere against the people, the law, and this place. And furthermore, he also brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled his holy place. So false information that Paul speaks against the Jews, which things he did not, the people. He spoke against the law, he never did. And this place, he never spoke against the temple. And furthermore, he also brought Greeks into the temple, which thing he did not. What happened, as verse 29 explains the situation. They had seen him with an Ephesian. And so they assume that Paul, if any Ephesian in the temple, Paul must have brought him into the temple. So the whole city was disturbed. Why? Because these false men rallied, gathered against Paul. Paul was experienced the same thing in Ephesus, and Elohim delivered him from that. Now in Jerusalem, the same thing happened from his own kinsmen are coming against him because they have false information about him. So we must be careful to clear the air. You saw what great lengths the apostles went through in the earlier verses of chapter 21 to clear things up. The people must come together. We must make sure they know the truth. Now today, brethren, There are plenty, lots of false information about the congregation of Elohim. It is our business to clear it all up. We must focus on these things. You understand? We need to learn to understand, have the mind of Messiah, to understand what concerns him. Unity is paramount for the body. It must be tight. There must be no schism in it. And we saw how the elders in Jerusalem were counseled Paul, admonished Paul, let's do this thing together to fix the problem. Unfortunately, it was interrupted here, but it shows us when there are issues, we must focus on the issues. We can't continue doing regular things. Carry on like everything's okay. So when there's misinformation about the congregation of Elohim, we need to focus and make sure we're putting correct information out about the congregation of Elohim. Do you know that most of the persecution, just like you see here, that continued to happen to the congregation of Elohim over the years, way after Paul, was because of misinformation? Read about it. Lots of the persecutions was misinformation. And that's why people like Irenaeus and others stood up to make their apology, so to say, make their response to the world about what the true faith was. So we must be on top of this, that when you hear false information, misrepresentation of Elohim's congregation, do not let it go unhandled. Do not let it go unchecked. Otherwise, it will spiral out of control, and we will suffer unnecessarily. We must be on top of these things. So through this misinformation, all the city was disturbed, and the people ran together, seized Paul, and dragged him out of the temple, and immediately the doors were shut. So it shows you, still, despite all the confusion that the nation of Israel had here during the times of Paul, they still understood the need to work together. I'm using a negative example here, but you see that one man made a claim that something is attacking the people. Something is attacking our way of life. Someone is attacking our central place. And the people rallied together to this man to put an end to what they believe. In this case, Paul. They believe Paul was an enemy, and they were trying to wipe him out. But they came together for it. You see that even then. How much more must we, who are the body of Messiah, who are united with Elohim, learn to gather together and rally when there's a cause, even as the elders did here? Simple thing. Hey, Paul, we heard this about you. And they thought, and that simple lie, which was a big lie, of course, they came together to fix it. We must do the same thing. Don't let things fall out of hand. We must help each other make the case of the righteousness of the people of Elohim. We must write papers against idolatry. We must preach against idolatry. We must preach against the idea that just because some quote unquote church is the oldest from ancient times that's still here, it's correct. No, a church can become corrupt. When a church starts adopting idolatry and makes excuses for it, it's corrupt. It's breaking the covenant. So we need to help each other, brethren, because the problems that exist now that are maligning, that are defacing what the world thinks of the congregation, it can be fixed. But we need to identify them and address them. We need help. We need to help each other do that because there's so much, but it's not too much. What we need to stop doing is stop being sidetracked by nonsense. You want to, people trying to defend things that are not issues for the congregation of Elohim. Sabbath versus Sunday. There's no such thing. Okay. Don't get caught up in that. And when one day we will look into this and we'll see why. The Sabbath is the Sabbath. The first day is the first day. Simple as that. Don't get sidetracked with that, but focus on the main things, like the unity of the body, the reputation of the body, because we are the body of Messiah. And we are to present ourselves as such. And so we must make sure that the world sees the body of Messiah properly. Don't get sidetracked by the deceivers who are deceiving themselves and holding back those whom Elohim and causing trouble for those whom Elohim is calling from the world into his body. Because the body is disfigured. The body is unrecognizable because of the false teachings and reputation that we need to clean that up, congregation of Elohim. Let's work together to do that. Let's focus on teaching unity. Let's focus on teaching the proper behavior of the congregation. Don't get yourselves caught up in this arguments about Hebrew and names. No, it's a waste of time, and those things have served to divide the body. Let's focus on the important things. And then maybe once we could clear up the important things, like the unity of the body, our right, holy, pure reputation, then we could prayerfully look into names and things of that nature, if it makes sense. But let's continue. So this mob mentality, they attacked Paul. They were seeking to kill him. But what happened? News came to the commander of the garrison that all Jerusalem was in an uproar. And people don't understand what Elohim did with Rome. They don't understand. He put Rome to keep things in order, brethren. Just as he took King Nebuchadnezzar to put things in order in many, many years before Messiah came to earth. Do not be deceived by those that are teaching falsehood, for all authority is of Elohim. And Elohim had a purpose for Rome. It's not because they were perfect and righteous, but because he put them there because they were the best suited to keep the world in order. And so what happened? So he immediately took soldiers. He didn't wait. There's chaos. And they're functioning. They're doing the will of Elohim to restore order. So he immediately took soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. And when they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped doing what? They stopped harming the beloved Paul. Do you notice that there was no one in Jerusalem that was doing right here? They were doing evil. But Elohim had the Gentile power authority he plays to stop this evil from going on. And what happened? Then the commander came near and took him and commanded him to be bound with two chains. He didn't make assumptions and just let Paul go free. He didn't know. So, okay, let's secure him, but let's keep him safe. We want order here. And he asked who he was and what he had done. Who and why? What is it? What? What has he done? And what happened? They muttered one thing and some among the multitude cried one thing and another. They didn't know what. There was no reasoning. There was a mob mentality. And Elohim said, you shall not follow after a mob to do injustice. And so when he could not ascertain the truth because of the tumult, he commanded him to be taken into the barracks. We don't know if he's innocent or not, but we're not going to let a man be killed unless there's a just cause. That's justice. Isn't that more reflective of the law of Elohim than what we've been reading throughout the history of how the nation of Jerusalem, of Israel, has been acting? Yes. And we need to open our eyes to understand the truth when the scriptures tells us how the Gentiles have obtained through faith a righteousness. Right? Faith, right understanding, doing justice. It's not a matter of long robes and carrying a stick and having so-called supposedly holy appearance. And there's justice and blood in our hands. not in our hands, but in the hands of those quote pretending, you know, to be righteous and saying this and all. No, it's carry out justice, carry out mercy. See, there was a bit of mercy here. I don't know if this man is guilty or not. Let me spare him from harm until we know what's going on. That's mercy. They interrupted. And when he reached the stairs, he had to be carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the mob. No, they don't even know why, but they're just saying one thing or another, trying to killing an innocent man whose righteousness far exceeds all of them multiple times, the Apostle Paul. And yet they're trying to kill him. He was more righteous, more obedient to the law than any one of them, and they were trying to kill him. How terrible, what contradiction that is. But the soldiers, nonetheless, did what was right. They picked up Paul, helped, kept them up beyond the reach of the mob. For the multitude of the people followed after crying, away, away with him. So let's see if I could finish this. Okay, I could finish this chapter. So let's read on. So as Paul was about to be led into the barracks, he said to the commander, that's in verse 37, "May I speak with you?" He replied, "Can you speak Greek?" You know, so he was so surprised, right? "May I speak with you?" Paul was blessed with the gifts beyond his natural ability. And so they, "Can you speak Greek? Are you not the Egyptian who some time ago raised an insurrection and led the 4,000 assassins out into the wilderness?" But Paul says, "I am a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no mean city, and I implore you, permit me to speak to the people." So when he had given him permission, Paul stood on the stairs and motioned with his hand to the people. And when there was a great silence, he spoke to them in the Hebrew language, saying, so I'm going to stop here, but let's go back. So Paul, in all, remember they left off beating him. That's the character, Messiah likeness character that was developed in Paul. He's in pain. Right, but you would think he would be, "I can't wait until they take me somewhere safe and help me feel better." No. Well, what did he do? He said, "May I speak with you?" Before he could even be, may I speak? He was polite and gentle and kind. Not weak, but not arrogant. "May I speak with you?" he replied. And he replied, "Can you speak Greek?" And he said, and he was not discouraged when the man said, "Are you not an Egyptian who some time ago, you know, led 4,000 assassins into the wilderness? 4,000 murderers, 4,000 secret killers?" You know, the word assassin here is a particular word. It really means like trained killers, you know, out into the wilderness. But Paul says, "I am a Yehudim." And when he says this, he means it in every sense of the word. He is a praiser of Elohim. He is a worker for Elohim. From Tarsus in Cilicia, and a citizen of evil city. "And I implore you, permit me to speak. I beg you, permit," because they have orders. "Take him into the barracks. Please, please, let me speak with the people." Just imagine the heart. What kind of spirit is in this man? Just imagine that. So when he had given him, and think about the soldier's character. The soldier did not slap him on the face. "Who gave you permission to speak?" The soldier did not revile him and said, "You lie." No. What did the soldier do? It says, verse 40. So when he had given him permission, contrast this with the behavior of what you've seen, the Jewish leaders of this time treated Messiah, treated the other apostles, treated Paul. Contrast that. And so when he had given him permission, Paul stood up on the stairs and motioned with his hand, because it was so loud. They could even probably hear him, but they could see him motioning. Not that they loved him, but they wanted to see what he had to say. But what happened? There was a great silence, not just a silence. So the spirit of Elohim is working here somehow. There was a great silence. And then he spoke to them in the Hebrew language. And we will see what. So he spoke with them. This is the example of him becoming all things to all men. Notice the man says, can thou speak Greek? What do you think happened? Paul spoke with him in Greek. But now he's motioning, speaking to the people in Jerusalem. He speaks with them in the Hebrew language. And it's interesting how he didn't speak with them in Hebrew, but rather he spoke to them in the Hebrew language. And there's a reason I say that, but that's something for further time. So I stop here, brethren. So what we see here in this chapter is the way Elohim does things. We see, you know, how the Spirit has been telling his children how Paul would be captured and how danger awaited him. Paul was convinced by the same one Spirit to go to Jerusalem to fulfill the will of Messiah, of Elohim, in keeping the commandment to observe the Feast of Pentecost and to be in Jerusalem for whatever Elohim purposed would happen to him there. We see how mob mentality works and how just because one person is Jewish, just because a person is Gentile, we're not to be respecters of persons. Because a Jewish person can do evil. A Gentile can do evil. As it is written, Elohim has, in his goodness, has concluded them all under sin, so that what? In his goodness, he might show them mercy. He has concluded them all. There's nothing gained in a person being one physical thing or another. There's no advantage. None whatsoever. The only advantage is Messiah. The only advantage is putting on the mind of Messiah. It's not trying to be Hebraic. That's useless. It'll accomplish nothing. It has accomplished nothing except causing problems, unnecessary disruptions, unnecessary confusions. Some people who were believers have lost family members who have abandoned the true faith and turned completely to Judaism on account of trying to go back to Hebraic roots. We are to be Messiah's congregation. We are to be Messiah-like. We are to strive to grow into the stature of Messiah. Not to try to be Greek, not to try to be Jewish, not to try to be any other thing of the flesh, but flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of Elohim. It's only that which has received the spirit of Elohim that will enter his kingdom. And Israel, as we pointed out before, is not a man-made thing. It's not a thing of the flesh. It's not even a Hebrew thing. Israel is from Elohim. Israel is something that Elohim declares, not man. Because Jacob was a Hebrew. He was of a Gentile nation, descendant of Abraham, who's from Ur. Okay? So you don't automatically become Israel No, you can only be Israel if Elohim so declares. If anyone who's a sinner cannot be Israel, for all sinners were cut off from the congregation of Israel. It is the righteous among the people who were in Elohim's sight, Israel. And a Yehudim, as Paul says, I am a Jew, is one who is inwardly, truly, then Elohim, yes, truly you are a praiser of Elohim. Truly you are. Elohim is not concerned with just mere words. He's concerned about the reality of things. The reality of things. Serving him in spirit and in truth. A Jew and Israel is wonderful. when that Jew, when that Israelite is obeying and loving Elohim. A Gentile is wonderful when that Gentile is obeying and serving Elohim. But neither, either one, neither are of any use to Elohim if they are in unrighteousness. And we see how, again, how Elohim has set the Romans to set things in order, to fulfill his will. And throughout history, up until the destruction of the temple and beyond, he used the Roman Empire to keep things in check. He used the beast power to keep things in check. Wow, what did I just say? Yes, because people don't understand the beast and all of these things. They fail, they forget what Elohim taught Daniel about the beast. Yes, the beast. The fourth beast was more fearful and all of this. And that's the beast. That's Rome. He put the beast there. He caused the beast to be in power so the beast can keep the nations and fulfill his will. And one day he'll get rid of the beast just like he has gotten rid of all the other beasts. But understand, these things are in Elohim's hands. Don't get caught up with some of the insane, unbiblical teachings that are out there about the beast and all of this. And no, that's not how it is. Okay, so let me stop here, and we will get into the beast more and more. Is the beast a good thing? No, the beast is not a good thing, but it's not the way people are making it. Paul was dealing with the beast right here. The beast is the fourth nation that would rule. And the last nation that the stone cut without hands, which is Messiah, would put an end to eventually, right? So let's make sure we really don't get caught up in all of this confused and erroneous teachings about the beast to one extreme or another. For all nations, all powers, all governments, and that's even Satan, cannot lift a finger without his permission. We must never forget that. We must never forget that. So the beast is completely under Elohim's authority and is subject to Elohim. And although, and this is why, as the brother John read earlier, the beast will be cast into the lake of fire, however that will happen, but in due time. But until then, all are his servants, including the beast, to keep order. All governments are there to keep order. Governments have nothing to do with the congregation of Elohim. Governments are for the world, to keep the world in check, while Elohim, who so loves the world, draws his people out of the world into his body. All those who want to are saved in Messiah. But in his kingdom, the earthly governments under Messiah, sovereign reign, do what they do. And if they do evil, he will punish them accordingly. Thank you for listening, brethren.